Guess what day it is?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning, everybody. Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran this morning. We have a great show lined up for you tonight to, as I mentioned just a little bit earlier, to keep you company on this blustery February morning. Oh, that's right. It's April. I had no idea. Andy Mazur is here as well. The sports in studio. Mary Vandeveld's here as well as Steve Rusanich, Vic Vaughn, Joe, and Mary in the producing studio. We got a lot to do today. This is a tremendous show lined up, and I always love to come in and keep things in order till Steve comes back. But today, I'm very excited to talk to a lot of great guests, including, you know, we've got so many great things to do today, including some sports stuff you're going to like. Patrick Sharp's going to be on the show
a little
later. Yeah. And also, we'll talk with the coach and general manager of the Chicago Sky, their big inaugural season at the Wintrust Arena downtown. So we'll talk about that. Plus, much, much more, including getting up to speed on all the news of the day. Yesterday, of course, in the afternoon, we were everybody around the country got the breaking news that there was a shooting at the YouTube headquarters, and we're learning more about the situation in San Bruno this morning, including the identification of the shooter. On the line with us, Alex Stone from ABC News. He's covering the event. Alex, thanks for joining us this morning. All right, so let's get right to it. What do we know today that we didn't know yesterday afternoon?
Well, we know a lot today that developed overnight. Justin, Nassim Ogdam was the shooter in her late 30s, and police believe that she had issues with the business practices of YouTube, that initially they thought this was a domestic situation, that it was maybe going after a boyfriend or somebody else. Now they say no, that's not the issue, that nobody was targeted specifically, that she didn't know any of her victims, and that she apparently was angry over the monetization, that she wasn't getting enough money out of her YouTube videos that she was posting. She was an avid poster about PETA and about animal rights issues, and that she was also angry over what she thought was censorship, that the search results had been the search methods in YouTube had been modified so that her videos weren't showing up, and that she came here hell-bent on getting revenge against the company and opened fire.
And there was reports this morning that the parents in San Diego, the parents were contacted authorities that she was missing and that she had may have an issue with YouTube, and they found her sleeping in her car. Tell us about that.
Yeah, she was found by Mountain View Police, which is not far away, yesterday morning, sleeping in her car, but nobody, the family, police, and nobody knew she had a gun, and the family says that they said, hey, you know, she's been mad at YouTube. She might be trying to go there to give them a piece of her mind, to tell them something, to create an issue, but they say that they didn't know that she had bought a gun and that they didn't think she would do anything like this. Now, police say, well, yeah, she was a missing person. They found her sleeping in her car. They notified the family that she was safe. She was coherent when they talked to her. They didn't see a gun. She didn't tell them about it. And that they said, all right, go on your way and get out of here. You can't sleep here. They say that's the normal thing, that she didn't do anything wrong. They couldn't arrest her at that point. But there's going to be a lot of focus on that police interaction yesterday morning. She went from that interaction and then carried out her shooting.
Okay, let's talk about the victims, because you know, yesterday afternoon into the evening, there were various reports about how many people were injured from the shooting. We've now this morning have the actual number.
Yeah, it's three people were shot. A fourth has an injury, like a sprained ankle from either evacuating or from hiding. But it is three victims who were shot. Two are in critical condition. One is in stable condition. Nobody is dead of her victims. She killed herself, but none of her victims died. They were hit by gunfire from the handgun that she had. Then when police arrived, they found her body, the handgun laying next to it. But at this point, at last word, all of her victims are alive and recovering.
Alex, is there any issue about YouTube headquarters and security? Of course, you know, it's hard to do to stop someone who's intent on doing something like this, especially at the sprawling community, the headquarters in San Bruno. But are there any issues about how the gun was able to get into the YouTube headquarters?
Well, no doubt it's going to be something that is going to be an issue. The gun itself, that those who are coming in don't normally go through metal detectors, but just getting in without being an employee, without a badge, that there are questions about how she was able to do that. Now, where she went to was just behind the security desk. So it seems like she may have walked in the main door, gone up to the security desk and just gone around it and gone right back outside to the eating area outside the cafeteria. She didn't make it into the offices, into the locked areas of where the work is actually done. But how she was able to get into that eating area isn't quite clear right now. And she may have, maybe she followed somebody. There was a door open. We don't know. All of that yet to be determined. She didn't make it very far, but she made it far enough.
The headquarters and some of the surrounding areas were put on lockdown yesterday. Has that all been removed? And is it business as usual for YouTube today in San Bruno?
No, it's it's only 4 o'clock in the morning, but two, it won't be today. It's still a crime scene right now. The crime lab is still working inside the building. There are still barricades up. Most of the businesses around the headquarters building, they are going to be functioning today, likely in a modified sense. But for YouTube, the headquarters building, at least the area, the building where the shooting happened, that's still a crime scene, and it may slowly become more of a normal scene later today, but at the moment it's not.
Okay, so the community, of course, the tech community and the area right outside of San Francisco, obviously there was a lot of thoughts and prayers that were sent from other titans of industry, Apple, Google. Of course, Google owns YouTube, but others who have brought it. How has the community reacted when you look? Because I know that outside of the building, people are putting up signs, and it seems that everyone is rallying around what happened at YouTube yesterday.
Right, yeah, in the buildings around here, this is, obviously we're in the Silicon Valley, very techy area, and all the buildings around here are tech companies as well. Walmart's online services, their headquarters is right across the street, and there are signs up in the windows today reading, "We love YouTube." They have the YouTube symbol. Some of the other buildings have done the same thing. All of the companies have come together. We've seen statements from Apple and from so many different high-tech companies, Twitter, saying that they're all thinking about their other companies, that these are, they're in some ways competition, in other ways that they are like teammates, that they're all here in the Silicon Valley and they all compete and innovate together. And at this time, they're all coming together and saying that they're thinking about YouTube.
Alex Stone, ABC News, covering the YouTube shooting in San Bruno, California. Alex, thanks for joining us this morning. Appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks, Justin.
There you go. Interesting update, because I know when I went to bed last night, a lot of that stuff was not figured out. But this morning, of course, revealing who the shooter was and more about what happened yesterday at the campus at YouTube in San Bruno. We'll continue to cover the story all day here on 720 WGN.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Don't get your kicks. With the top 666, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
All right, we got the top 666. A lot to do today. Cam Davis is going to join us coming up at 640, so we'll have that. Plus a slew of segments. I tallied it up today, Andy. There's probably about 12, 15 people on the show today.
Nice.
So we're gonna get to it. We'll start with the top 666. Today, the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., many have made their way to Memphis to commemorate the terrible moment in American history, a moment that caused mass rioting and chaos around the country for weeks after, including right here in Chicago. We're going to hear from some people who lived through it and unpack why King once said Chicago was worse than Mississippi when it came to racism in the 60s. That's coming up throughout this morning's program. Sources are telling the press that Robert Mueller met with Trump lawyers recently, and even though the president remains under investigation, apparently Mueller told them that he's not under criminal investigation. And that pretty much sums up American politics in 2018.
Not currently under criminal investigation.
It's not criminal. It's investigation, but it's not criminal.
Yeah. He is a subject of an investigation, yes, though, which is pretty bad in itself.
Right. Yeah. But that it should be a point of pride now for anyone who's in politics. Like, no, it's not a criminal investigation.
Right.
It's just an ethical investigation.
Right.
So vote for me.
Mm. Here we are. Wow.
Yesterday, the Trump administration had suggested new tariffs on the Chinese. This after the Chinese government slapped retaliatory tariffs on American goods like pork and wine. pork wine and combination. But the White House says that this isn't a retaliatory retaliation. This was a planned. It had nothing to do with fighting Chinese business. This had all to do with fighting Chinese business practices of demanding American intellectual property. You know they do this? I didn't know this. But one of the issues, and I was reading a ton about this yesterday, is that to do a lot of American businesses, when they have to do import and exporting with China, China demands the intellectual property. That's part of what's been happening. So a lot of businesses, to be able to get these great trade deals, have been had to give up their IP. And so this has been something that the White House and President Trump campaigned on.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting to see that he's actually doing it. He's just doing it at a really weird time in the middle of a trade war to do that. But this is something they said has been on the books.
Well, and you have to see that by the numbers here, he's not winning this trade war. You know, yeah. He said that trade wars are easy to win. Dow futures are down 500 points this morning.
You believe that?
Nearly 2% on the NASDAQ, nearly 2% on the S&P. Soybean prices are down about 5%.
I'm playing devil's advocate. For a lot of people, I've seen the news this morning, everyone saying that this is dangerous to play trade war, but he has to know that as a businessman, and he knows that there's a long game as opposed to the short. You may lose in the short, but he's trying to win in the long. Yeah,
I don't know.
Deafening silence from the car.
All I know is that the markets are now in negative territory for the year. All of the gains that we made this year are gone, and this could be a really bad day on the markets.
Well,
500 points, it's not even 7 o'clock.
The Chinese say they're going to retaliate. That's what's happening, is they're retaliating with tariffs of their own and American products like cars, soybeans, hypercolor T-shirts. I made that last one up. I've already been tariffed out. If the Chinese want to strike at the heart of American consumers, why not just put a tariff on LaCroix and avocado toast? We would surrender in a heartbeat. We'd be like, you win.
And Instagram.
Oh,
and Instagram.
Not avocado toast. I love it.
See?
It's the best.
See? I don't want to advise the Chinese government on what products they should be looking at, but yeah. Avocados and bread and toasters.
No,
all three
thanks.
Of those. You do that combination to be a lot more. America could put a stop to this trade war in a moment. All right. State Representative Will Guzzardi has a press conference later today to introduce a bill to protect all employees in the state of Illinois from discrimination. Okay, up until now, the law actually quantifies that protections would not be given to employees that work for companies that employ less than 15 people. Okay. Someone explain that to me. So I can only imagine that businesses and lawmakers in the 70s were like, yeah, but I really want to sexually harass people. How can I do that? I don't know. What if we said it less than 15 people?
Or 14,
sold.
Yeah. And I wonder how much that has to do with we don't have, you know, want to force small businesses to hire an HR department.
Yeah.
But still, you'd think.
But
that,
still, you would think at this point, I mean, 2018, to be like, I know how we can get rid of discrimination and harassment in the workplace. Put a law on the books that say that it can't happen. Like, that's where we're at,
right,
in 2018.
Period.
You're like, that's not good. It makes me think about what else they were talking about in the 70s and 80s. We're like, how can I put waste in the lake? Is there any way to do that? Well, let me check
where
and see
can
what
I
we
pour,
can do.
Where can I pour this lead paint?
Exactly. All right. A new report by the CDC says that 1 in 4 human beings have antibiotic-resistant bacteria in their systems, even without any symptoms. But there is good news. The CDC also reports that less antibiotic-resistant bacteria is being detected. So the moral of the story, you're going to die someday, whether you know it or not.
Really?
That's essentially
it.
Hmm. I don't know. I don't want to shake you so early in the morning, Andy, but it's going to happen.
That turned ghostly white when you told me that.
Yeah, right? And finally, don't look now. Seriously, don't look. But the Chicago Bulls have won 3 in a row, and in a cruel twist of fate, are playing themselves right out of a lottery pick. The team's win over Charlotte last night, coupled with the Knicks' loss against Orlando, make the two squads tied for the 8th overall pick in next year's draft. Even when the Bulls win, they lose.
I know.
They have 2 upcoming games against Brooklyn, who I guess you call it a 2-game lead in this case. Back-to-backs. So that's going to be an amazing moment for NBA basketball. The Brooklyn Nets and the Chicago Bulls fighting it out to tank worse.
Yeah, tanks for nothing.
Tanks for nothing.
You know, it's just, it's bad. I mean, I keep thinking about the movie Major League. You know, when the new owner takes over, she wants to impose a series of fines for good play.
Right.
That's what they should do.
It makes you mad as a Bulls fan, because we've had to been we've been forced to buy into this tank all year. We've watched a really mediocre product, less than mediocre product. And the only hope is, well, okay, I guess we'll buy in. But they've been inconsistent in their messaging, and here they are, inconsistent with the team. They shut down three or four of their players, and they're still winning games at the end of the season because the other teams are like, well, we want the draft pick too.
Yeah, maybe they even underestimated the talent of some of the young guys they have. Yeah.
The Nets game will be interesting because the Nets don't have their first-round pick. They don't have any incentive to tank. They're just really bad.
They're just bad.
Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah, they don't own their first-round. I don't even think that's protected.
I mean, I think this is an indictment of Fred Hoiberg. How he has his guys playing so hard when they need to be playing soft, that's on the coach. He needs to motivate them to lose.
And maybe they're fighting for a place on the team.
Yeah, I guess. But I would, if somebody made a great play, I'd be like, time out. Get off. Get off the course.
Get out.
Hey, why do they get punished for winning? I hate that.
Well,
they
set the rules. The Bulls were the team that did this. They made their own bet on this tank. So now the fans here have to wonder and scratch our heads about what we should be rooting for, winning or losing. But all right, that's 6-6.
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran this morning. Steve will be back tomorrow. Tomorrow, we've got planned. I think this is all going to happen. The big home opener for the Chicago White Sox. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited that I will be back here filling in for Steve, but only to essentially run the board because Steve's going to be at the park with Andrea and everybody else, and they will be doing the show from there, and I'll sort of be the guy who says, guys, I hate to interrupt, but we got to get to a commercial break. That'll be my job tomorrow. The guy who is the bummer, the technical bummer.
Every party needs a pooper.
That'll be me tomorrow. So Tuna will be back tomorrow. But today, Steve's off, and like I said, tomorrow, big show down at Guaranteed Rate Field as the White Sox have their home opener, hopefully. This weather cooperates. And, of course, this morning, Mary's got you on the traffic, of course, with the slight April snow. We're having some delays on the roads and some trains. So stick here at WGN as we will give you all the updates. Well, this next story is one that is, I mean, I want to take to Hollywood because I think it's a good political story. Cam Davis was a write-in candidate for the Water Reclamation District Commissioner spot. It's a very unusual situation. As the sitting commissioner died in December, leaving the position open with no one running since the vacancy happened after the ballot deadline. So the only way to get on the ballot was to do a write-in. So Cam Davis, a former Obama EPA appointee, took to the old-fashioned write-in style for campaign, and he would need at least 8,000 write-ins to qualify, to let alone win. And he did just that. Now here's where the story gets interesting. Because it was a write-in, the vote tally takes more time, right? In the weeks since the primary, it was leaked that Davis would have enough to win. Davis, a Democrat, was going to do the unthinkable. He was going to win a write-in campaign. But then the unthinkable kind of happened. Since the position was vacated by the untimely death, the Illinois governor does have the authority to appoint a successor. He hadn't done it for months, but last week, right after the primary, Rauner appointed Republican David Walsh to the seat. Okay, so now what? So what? No one's disputing that. Walsh will be the Republican, Cam Davis will be the Democrat. We'll see you in November, right? Not so fast. The Rauner administration says that the original term was still 2020, so there should be no election in November, and the write-in candidacy that we just saw, historic, does not matter. Did I get that right, Cam Davis, the candidate for Water Reclamation District, who joins me now on the line? Was that somewhat accurate?
It wasn't somewhat accurate. It was dead on. You nailed it.
Cam, we have had you on the download a couple times, and I've known you for years. This is something, you know, why don't we start right at the top, this concept of running a write-in campaign. And when we talked about it, it was a little bit of a chuckle because it's so difficult. I mean, there's very rare instances where someone can actually win in a write-in campaign, but you did just that. How did you do it?
Well, I've been sifting through the past 2 to 3 months trying to figure that out myself, but I think there are a bunch of ingredients. One of them is I think that the the electorate is just really energized right now, especially here in Chicago. People are, they see what's going on at the federal level with these rollbacks on environmental protection. And this is a region that cares deeply about their environment as their life support system, especially water, because we live in one of the most water-rich regions in the whole world. And so when there is a vote about something that is a core ingredient to life itself, let alone the economy, I think people care a lot. So that was, I think that that was one thing at play. Another thing that was at play was I think people liked the challenge. A lot of folks said it couldn't be done. People are confused by the write-in process. But people, I was just so inspired to see people educating themselves, not just about this really obscure race, but also how to do a write-in vote that they had never done before in their lives. People who had been voting for, you know, 30, 40 years, maybe even more, saying, I've never done a write-in before. I want to do it. So it became kind of the geeky, cool new thing to do.
Cam, let me ask you this, because the Republicans, I mean, this is for the Democratic primary. The Republicans didn't do a primary for the commissioner seat. And the idea would be that the winner of this Democrat primary would essentially be unopposed in November. Did you know that it was a possibility that the governor could jump in and appoint a successor without going through the primary?
Yeah, I did. And there was some buzz about this even back in January when I decided to throw my hat in the ring, Justin. And so I did the legal research myself back in February and found that that the governor could appoint somebody, but the law is really clear. The governor can't appoint past the next regular election. Well, Governor Rauner ought to know when the next regular election is, right? Because he's actually running in it, and that's this November. So we're ready. We figured this was going to happen, and we're ready for it.
And you're okay. I mean, just you're okay with the idea of running an election in the general in November against the Republican candidate, against David Walsh, if that's the general, meaning that would happen in November. You were counting on something like that happening.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And in fact, I think that running against other nominees from other parties is a healthy thing for our society. That's the way it should be done. What's not healthy is when you see an effort to usurp the power of the voters. And that's exactly what has happened here.
So what are the recourses? What can you do? Do you have to take this matter to court? I mean, because the governor's interpretation has been, in the office put out a statement saying we intend for Mr. Walsh to carry out the entire term, which would be till 2020. So what do you do? What's the recourse?
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see the statements coming out of the other camp, that's their intent, that's what they believe, but nowhere do you see that there's any legal basis for that. So it's just a raw power grab attempt, and I think the voters aren't going to sit for it. They want to elect somebody that they think is qualified. I think part of it's just going to have to turn on the possibility of litigation. And I also think that there will be an election in November. I'm very confident of that.
I guess the question I have is, of course, when you talk about the vote, I mean, we went through the write-in. Voters did, which seemed to be the unthinkable, this idea of over 8,000 votes just to qualify and then more than that to win. And it's really hard to do in the write-in where you have to write in Cameron Davis or Cam Davis or Cam Davidson or whatever it might be, because the law has some leeway when it comes to what your name is. But the question is, and this is what I don't understand, is do you essentially have to put your own fees in to fight this litigation, to fight this political, as you say, power grab? And when it comes to the governor, I mean, those taxpayer dollars, is this going to be something that plays out in court that taxpayers are paying for?
So, yeah, I am going to have to use my own dollars. I'm asking friends and family to help out as well. And at the end of the day, it's in everybody's interest that democracy play out the way it should through voting, not through these kind of, you know, back channel appointments that are happening. But I'm willing to do that. I've spent 30 plus years, my entire career, working for the public's interest in our water, and that's not going to stop now. And this attempt at a power grab is not going to stop me. I'm going to keep going.
Yeah. Well, it's an amazing political story, and congratulations on being able to win an election by write-in. Besides, you know, maybe Mickey Mouse or Randy of the Redwoods, I don't think this has ever happened before. Cam Davis, who's running for Water Reclamation District Commissioner, hopefully in November, just for the fact that this is how it should play out. We had a primary system for this, so a Republican and a Democrat, but right now the governor has appointed somebody, and his office believes that that appointment should stay till 2020, years after the general in November. Cam Davis, thanks for joining us and giving us an update on the situation that is playing out here in the state of Illinois.
Yeah. Thanks, Justin.
That's so interesting. I don't know. You know, I like Cam Davis. I do. I've always liked him, and he's been a guy who's fought for the Great Lakes before he got into the. He was picked by the Obama administration to come in because of his work. I forgot it was the Great Lakes Alliance, whatever it was, to actually protect the Great Lakes and deal with lake levels and water. And so it's a no brainer, and I'm glad that I can't believe that a guy won a writing campaign. That's awesome. But to have like a governor come in, you know, a week after the primary and go, you know what you guys did with that? That's great, but I have the power to do this. So you know what? Forget it. 2020. I don't like that. I just don't like it for democracy. I'd love to see Walsh and Davis, you know, duke it out in November. I'm not a fan of the appointee to 2020 and to erase and eradicate what seemed to be the voters' will, at least on the Democrat side. So anyway, who am I?
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
All right, back here at 720 WGN, Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran this morning. Got a lot coming up, including we'll talk about the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. with some people here in Chicago who studied with King, and Reverend Dr. Al Sampson, who I'm very excited to have him on, Southside pastor for a long time, who is the only pastor in Chicago who was personally ordained by King himself. In Atlanta, 1966. We'll talk with him coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. I'm going to introduce Andy Mazur, of course, Steve Versanich, Mary Vandeveld, and Sandberg, who is here. Is that how it works? Do you say Mary Vandeveld's name first?
Yep.
And then then just and Sandberg? Just
yes,
put that on there?
Just Sandberg, yeah. Basically.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. You know, we have, unfortunately, only three more Hawks games until the season is over.
I'm going Friday.
Are you? Oh, yeah. Good for you. Yeah. That'll be, you know, my husband works the Hawks games. And since I've been in a relationship with him, the Hawks are always in the postseason. And so last night we were sitting on the couch and we were watching live from the Masters. And he said, in just three more games, I'll be home every night.
And Mary,
I was like, oh no, this early in April, he's going to be home every night. I'm not prepared for this.
That's so funny.
I wonder if all the wives of players and things are thinking like, uh-oh. We're not ready for them to be, because you think, in theory, they're going to be around to help, but
no, they're not.
You're not helpful as husbands,
no.
Really.
And I'm in the same boat. The White Sox broadcast, usually when the Blackhawks end, the download, which I do from 7 to 11 here, is on. It's on Monday through Friday till high school football takes an hour in August or whatever, and then the Blackhawks are back.
Right.
But with the White Sox, that's what I said to my wife, too. I'm like, I'm going to be home a lot.
Oh, yeah. No.
She's like, what?
Pat likes to have dinner every night, and I don't always want dinner. Sometimes I just eat toast in my bed and watch Office reruns on Netflix when he's at the Hawks game. So this is really cramping my lifestyle.
I have to say, as someone who works nights, when my schedule changes and I'm home, I don't know what it is, but I get into routine, which, just like you said, it's not very helpful. Like, I feel like you'd be, I would be awake and ready to go. Like, I get home from it to pick up my son from school, be ready to go. I'll help out because I'm in show mode. Mm-hmm. But instead, I hit the couch 5:30. I'm like, oh, maybe watch a little Modern Family in the second half. And I'm into nap mode by 6 o'clock. And I don't get how that's possible with the schedule that I have.
That's hilarious. The kids have started, I think, thanks to Steve Cochran, calling Pat's spot on the couch the throne, because that's where he takes position, and we No one else can sit there. And
it is weird. We should ask.
And when you're in the throne, that's when you have control of the remote, which is really annoying too.
We should try to. We'll ask Patrick Sharp, who'll be Breakfast with the Blackhawk later this in the show. We should ask him about this, about what he's going to do now that there is no playoff run. Because even when he was at Dallas, Dallas was a good team, and they would find themselves in the playoffs as well. So this is back to the early days of Patrick Sharp's career when,
unfortunately, yes.
You know, he would get there. I read Mark Lazarus' book where about the Blackhawks, where, and I'll ask Sharpie about this too, but where Sharpie would have to take tickets to the metro station and like hand them out to people, and people are like, I don't want them.
Like, who are you? What team do you play for?
Where'd you get that jersey?
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're going to be,
I understand,
it's a long off season. So.
I need to do, maybe I can get pointers, because I need to, with having more time at home, I need to be better at
helping,
but also just being,
and not being
active.
In the way, not acting like another child in the house.
Right.
Yeah, I think a lot of men could use some instruction on that.
There you go. We could do the whole, you know, we just throw everything else out today, and we'll just do the next 2 hours on how men could be better between 5 and 7 p.m.
Mary, how do you still watch all your dancing shows and stuff when he's home all the time?
I send him in the other room.
Oh, you send him in the other room?
Oh, for sure. I have rule over the TV.
Yeah,
I do.
Incredible.
He likes to watch TV in the kitchen for some reason. He likes to cook, so he's in the kitchen a lot. So we have role reversal now that he's retired. So it's great. But he sits in the kitchen. I'm like, except I can hear the TV in the kitchen while I'm in the other room, and it's kind of
noisy.
Well,
my wife, she grew up in a household where it was a lot of college basketball and TV's really loud. Her dad would watch. So she has an aversion to the sound of sports.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll be watching the game. And it's so funny because now I've found myself muting the game. Like last night I was watching the Sox game and I muted it because I'm like, then we're okay.
Then she's not noticing that sports are fine.
Yeah, but like... You get, especially at college basketball, with the squeaky shoes. There's so much squeaky shoes going on with a college basketball game that she's just like, it takes 5 seconds for her to go, can you turn that down?
Yeah, I don't care for the college basketball sound myself. And on Monday, you know, the Hawks have sometimes played the night of the national championship, so I haven't been forced to watch it. Unfortunately, there was no game on Monday night, so I had to sit there and watch it with my husband, and I didn't care for it.
All right. Well, hopefully in the next 2 hours, we can get to the bottom of how we can help. Does that sound good?
You know, I'm listening to all this and thinking to myself, you know, I might be the smartest one out of all of you guys.
Because you're single. You know, it's my sister sometimes will say, she'll complain about being single, and I'm like, when I'm, you know, knee deep in everything at my house and can't find any time to myself. So you keep count your blessings over there.
Keep complaining
when you're by yourself at your house calling the shots.
All right, coming up the news, and then we'll continue with the 7 o'clock hour. Steve Cochran Show. Stay with us
live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran this morning. Steve Rzanich, stay right there. I'm interested because we've had a. Obviously, the Dow future, or I guess what you call the pre-Dow, which is this morning, has shown that there is a precipitous drop in trading, and things aren't looking good after announcements of escalating trade wars. What does it mean? I mean, what does it mean that the Dow doesn't, that the market doesn't actually open here until, 8:30? Their time, so 9:30 our time.
8:30 our time, 9:30 their
time.
Got
it. Yeah. But for me, what does it mean? I mean, what can we expect in the next hour?
Well, it means that investors are nervous about all of this. And the Commerce Secretary was just on CNBC. He says he's actually surprised by the market's reaction. I can't understand why he would be surprised. We've seen this now for the past few days. Whenever we have had this trade issue come up, the markets have reacted negatively. And they're reacting because this new round of tariffs responding to the United States by China is serious. It's going after things like aircraft. So that's going to affect Boeing. Boeing stock goes down. That's the Dow going down. It's one of the big Dow components. It can move the stock market either way, positively or negatively. So when Boeing goes down, that might take 100, maybe more points off the Dow right there. There are all these other big companies like Caterpillar here in Illinois and Archer Daniels Midland and Navistar. All of those companies, when they start losing ground, that's what impacts the Dow the most. But it's across the board this morning, Justin. It's the NASDAQ down almost 1.5%. 106 points. S&P futures down 1.5% as well. So it's everywhere across the board this morning.
And how accurate usually is when you talk about Dow futures to what actually happens when the market opens at 8:30?
It's generally pretty accurate. There's another market index that I look at from time to time, and that's called the implied open. And let me see if I can figure that up on the fly here. So the Dow futures are right now down 462 points. The implied open is even farther down than that, about 466 points. So it's right. It's almost right there, even. So,
well, you cover this, of course, with the opening bell, and you watch this stuff all day for WGN. Is it something that investors should be alarmed about, or is this usually what happens when you have news of trade wars playing out overnight?
I think it's something that investors should be concerned about. It is because it's if it were just a one day one off, maybe not. But this has now become a trend. We're in correction territory where we've had these big drops now, time after time, week after week, where we have lost all of our gains for this year completely now on the stock market in all three indices,
right,
in correction territory for the Dow and S&P. So it is concerning. Something, you know, needs to stabilize here. And I don't see it happening before 8:30.
Well, we'll pay attention to it, of course, when the markets open at 8:30. Steve Grzanich here on WGN Radio.
You know how they have those like celebrity bell openers?
Yeah.
I would hate to be on a day when everything's depressing
this
news.
This is your day.
Yeah, and yeah. Have
you
like,
got that new cookbook, and you're like,
low.
Oh man, I had to get Wednesday,
right?
Yeah. Hopefully it's something fun this morning so that they can all be smiling.
And we'll see about that. All right, coming up here at 7:20, we're going to give away tickets to Brian Regan. Brian Regan is coming to the Chicago Theater on New Year's Eve. That was just announced. That's great. Brian Regan, I would say a regular here on the Cochran Show, if you've heard him on the show.
Yeah, he comes on.
He, of course, a great stand-up comedian. Vanity Fair once called him the funniest stand-up alive.
And I think the way it could work is you can go to Steve Cochran's New Year's Eve show, and then you could still go to Brian Regan because Steve's is always so early.
Right. Steve does the early
New Year's. He does the early, right. So you can go do other things.
There you go. We're getting we're already setting up your New Year's Eve plans. I mean, it feels like it's January outside.
It looks like
it's January, so maybe it all kind of plays together. For me, tonight, I'm very excited. I'm trying to think of a great... you know, sort of segue to this, but my New Year's starts tonight as we're adopting a new cat tonight.
Aww.
Yeah, how about that, huh? So this is what I'm hoping will be, and maybe this is my New Year's Eve celebration for years to come, that I will have two cats. We have a cat now and we're adopting a cat, and I was very excited, and I'm you know, as I look to the listeners for advice, but we've never had two cats, just one, and we got a kitten about a year ago. And so this cat that we're getting is a year old, so it's not a kitten. It's another, they're the same age.
Do you have a name for the new cat?
Minetta.
Minetta? What is that?
Well, I'm glad that you like it, Mary.
What's the old cat's name?
The old cat is Mittens.
Mittens and Minetta?
Yeah, Minetta is...
sounds like a movie.
Yeah, we were going to go with Minerva, because that's a Harry Potter reference, but then we're like, that's a Harry Potter reference, and we can't do that. Because Harry Potter will go out of style at some point, and be like, then we still got this cat. You know, so we went with Minetta, like the Minetta Tavern in New York City.
Oh, fancy.
Yeah, that's what we're going for.
How did Mittens get Mittens?
Mittens got Mittens because it rhymed with the...
kittens.
Yeah, it was Mittens and Monroe. His last name's Monroe, so it's Mr. Mittens Monroe. Wait, and this is Miss Minetta Monroe.
Your cat has its own last name.
Yeah, heck yeah. We don't mess around. So we have to figure... I was excited about this, and part of the reason I signed off on it, which, you know, that's what you have to do in a family, is someone else makes the decision, you go, sure, that sounds great.
Sure, go ahead.
Was because it was through a shelter, and this is a rescue. And so I was sold that this was a rescue possibly from Houston or from Florida and the hurricanes, maybe even Puerto Rico, somewhere where you're like, oh, I feel like I'm making a difference in the... And then I was told that the cat's from Tennessee or Mississippi in a hoarding situation.
So it's not as cool of
a rescue
cat. It's
just not as cool. And I'm like, all right, well, all right. That's okay. I don't feel as as like a sacrifice like for the good of the
And you were
for
told
animals in the country.
Steve Dale gave you some what I think is bizarre advice.
Steve Dale, this
our
is
pet
this is not
here
Steve
at the
Steve told me this is his advice, and not just his advice, but his process that all the shelters use now. He patented it in some form. But this concept that how to introduce the two cats. So maybe we'll do this. We'll talk. We'll find out what's going on in the roads right now, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about what you have to do to introduce the two cats to each other and to the household. I thought it was
candles.
I thought it was you throw a piece of salmon out and you say whoever eats it first, you're
cat
my favorite,
chow.
Right?
Yeah.
But there's a lot more that goes
Table
into
cloth.
It. So we'll do that right after. And give away the Brian Regan tickets coming up here.
I've always liked Fig Newtons. I'm trying to see if it's okay to eat them. And everything looked fine. The fat content, everything. I looked at the serving size. 2 cookies. Who the hell eats 2 cookies? I eat Fig Newtons by the sleeve. 2 sleeves is a serving size. I open them both and eat them like a tree chipper. Fig Newton shavings coming off the side.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Brian Regan right there, stand-up comedian. Let's do this. Seventh caller gets a pair of tickets to see comedian Brian Regan at the Chicago Theater on New Year's Eve, which is December 31st at 8 p.m. Vanity Fair called Brian the Funniest Stand-Up Alive. Get tickets starting Friday, April 6th. This Friday at 10 a.m. at the Chicago Theater box office.
We're going to give away another pair of tickets
on
Friday as well.
We're going
to give another pair.
All right, seventh caller right now, 312-981-7200 is going to get the tickets for Brian Regan on New Year's Eve, which you can do Cochran, then Brian Regan.
There you go. A thing about Fig Newtons, so I like those. I also liked when they had the apple Newtons and strawberry Newtons.
Yeah.
And when I was in college, I used to get them. But I like to open the package and leave it in the refrigerator and let them get stale. And then I only like to eat the edges. I don't like to eat the middle.
Specific, right.
So I would eat the edges off and then just throw away the middle part.
Where does one come up with an idea like that?
You know, probably from having a package around for a while and then realizing that they taste better stale. Oh. I think they taste better stale and a little bit cold. I like all my cookies cold, if anyone...
Cold cookies. We're learning something new here.
I do. People think it's weird until... you have it, and then you're like, oh, it does taste good. I make these chocolate chip cookies, and we freeze them. These really thin ones, and they're delicious.
I like that. Okay, all right.
Anyway,
so,
back to your cat.
Yeah,
the last name.
I'd rather talk about cold cookies.
Is Madura or whatever
no,
your
it's
cat?
No, it's Minetta.
Minetta.
Monroe.
Minetta Monroe. Yeah. Now, why don't your cats have your last name?
Because we go with Monroe as a street name. That's kind of the alliteration of the M. So the idea that Steve Dale was telling me is that when you introduce two cats to each other, you have to, you close off, you put one cat, the new cat in a room that's just its own room, and you, for a week, no other contact with the other cat. So it's just for a week. So we have that all set up. And then you start doing what they, I think it's like a scent swap is what they call
right.
it, where they will, you let the one cat come in, you take that cat out and you let the other cat come in and sniff and all the stuff. And then you do the same. You let the other cat go out a little bit and sniff the other cat stuff. And then there's also a cloth involved where you rub the face of one cat in the cloth and then you rub the face or you let the other one sniff. It's just a whole process that I will screw up. There's no doubt I'll screw up because it's really going to. Yeah.
That doesn't seem reasonable.
It doesn't occur
in nature. Cats hook up on the street all the time.
Yeah.
Nobody's like got a cloth.
And this isn't even about
face.
Hookup. This is just about.
Getting along.
Sure, but why does that ensure you get along? Because you've smelled it?
Throw them in a room. Let them have a cat fight.
I think the concept is that they get used to each other's smell, and then there's an anticipation to it. It's almost like, you know, dating for a while before you actually do anything.
Okay.
Like, I think it's the same concept. Like, and then, you know, when you're finally introduced, you're like, oh, I've been smelling you for like a week and a half.
I've been smelling you through that door in that room, and I've been waiting to get at you whole time.
I think that's what's happening.
Then what if the other cat's disappointed then?
Right. What if they don't have that smell chemistry?
Exactly right.
All right.
Could be the case.
Marie, you got the tickets for Brian Regan.
I know. Thank you so much. I'm so excited.
And it's also your birthday today.
It is.
Hey,
can you believe it?
Happy birthday. What a great way to win.
What a great way to start the day. It sure is. Thank
you
so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for calling, and thanks for to letting us talk to you on your birthday. I feel like this is the greatest way to start a birthday. First off, you get free tickets. Second, you get to go on the radio and drive time in Chicago and tell everybody it's your birthday.
I know. What a great way. So thanks for helping me start the day off right.
What are you doing the rest of the day, Marie, for your birthday?
Oh, going to work and then going out for pizza with my boyfriend.
Oh, nice. Pizza? That sounds like the greatest birthday ever. I'm a big pizza fan, so.
My favorite food.
Do you work at one of those places where they'll celebrate your birthday?
Yeah, I'm hope. Yeah, we actually are getting lunch today, so free birthday lunch.
Yeah,
that's fun. We're big on birthday celebrations here at WGN.
I'd cut that out. If I were an owner of the business, I'd be like, you know, we'll do a cake or something. Maybe we'll do some Fig Newtons, cold Fig Newtons.
Just the
edges. But the birthday lunch is just too much.
I think you should have the option when you work at a place. If you like to have a day off, you should be given a day off. If you like to celebrate with all the staff, you can celebrate with all the staff. All right. I get uncomfortable when everyone sings to me, but good for you, Marie.
There you go. Thanks, Marie.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Right.
Thank you.
She gets the tickets. How about that? All right. We'll take a break here, and then we'll get to the news at 7:30. And afterwards, we'll talk more about the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and its impact on Chicago. Of course, we know Chicagoans know about the Chicago riots, what happened after the assassination, but also about King's time in Chicago. He spent some time here, and he also said at one point that Chicago was worse when it came to racism than Mississippi. So we'll talk about that and what we can learn from King's teachings, but also what's the Chicagoans Hermine Hartman and Reverend Dr. Al Sampson learned from the teachings specifically with King in their lives. So they'll be coming up here after the news. So stay with us here on WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran this morning here on 720 WGN. Steve will be back tomorrow for our big opening day broadcast for the Chicago White Sox. I'll be in this chair again. Steve and Andrea and Dave Bennett will all be at Guaranteed Rate Field. We're doing a great broadcast, our opening day celebration, which is throughout the entire day. Let's make sure they play this game tomorrow. That'll be the issue. But yeah, plenty to do here. Be back tomorrow, but in the chair today for Steve, who's off. Well, of course, today, the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in Memphis. Last night, huge celebration or celebrations of the impact and the life of Dr. King, as well as today. So many people there. Doma Tipongo for WGN has put together some great pieces, as well as a piece today in the Chicago Sun-Times. Great stuff. Check it out on our website, WGNradio.com, or at the Sun-Times today. Joining us on the line now, talk about King's impact, but also his impact here in the city of Chicago. Hermine Hartman. Hermine, of course, the founder of Indigo Magazine and a longtime Chicago civil rights leader. Hermine, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Thanks for being here.
Snowy day in April.
Yeah, I know, right? also on the line with us, Reverend Dr. Al Sampson. He's the pastor at Fernwood United Methodist Church in Chicago, but also the former housing director for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and the only member of the SCLC to be personally ordained by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. himself in 1966. Reverend Sampson, an honor to have you on the program. Appreciate you being here.
Yes, God bless, and good morning to you and Sister Hermine Hartman and the WGN family.
Let's start with you, Hermine. What is this? I mean, this day, of course, the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. King. What's it mean to you today?
Well, it's 50 years that we mourn a great life, a minister, a Southern Baptist minister that changed America by challenging the country to live up to its creed as to what has been written in Constitution and Preamble and Declaration of Independence. He challenged this country to be all that, to be all that it said it could and should be. And he did it with nonviolence. He did it with persistence. He did it with moral authority. He did it with a minister's voice. One of the things that is absolutely amazing about Dr. King, he was so young. He was just so young. We look at the kids marching today and we say, oh, where will they go? They're youth. Well, the civil rights movement was a youth movement, right, including its leader. That's number one. And number two, Dr. King was not an elected official. Not one vote, but he did more than some presidents have done. And his career was short-lived. It was only 13 years. And what a difference he made.
I'll ask you the same question, Reverend Sampson, being, you know, and we'll get into your role as a housing director for the SCLC as well. But today, as there's so much reflection and memories and celebration of the life of Dr. King, what does this day mean to you?
Well, it means a day of reflection, a day of watching how one man's idea of having the power as a black man in America to touch the lives of people, not based on the color of their skin, but based on the content of their character. From children to the elderly, because of Dr. King, people have now recognized that there was a man who came like Mahatma Gandhi in India, like Nelson Mandela in South Africa. And I'll always remember the power of the things that we did in the street ended up inside the very DNA of a whole lot of folk all over the world. And I think that's a great impact when we didn't realize when we did what we did, the sacrifices that we made after his untimely death, how in this technological age, access to him and his thoughts and his memories and his legacy becomes a part of our library of opportunity and experiences.
Well, Chicago plays a tremendous role in the life and work of Dr. King, not just, of course, what happened after his assassination, but what happened in 1966 with the Chicago Freedom Movement, and both of you were involved. But, Hermine, I want to start with you because you grew up in Chicago, and King was famous for saying that, you know, Chicago was worse than Mississippi when he was here after marching and recognizing that some of the issues that were in the South were worse in the North. Talk about what you remember about Dr. King being in Chicago, being a Chicagoan.
Well, I was in school. I was still in high school, and I wanted to march so bad, but my mother thought it would be dangerous and would not allow it to happen. She wouldn't allow me to go. But indeed, we were watching it very, very closely on television. I thought the South was another country as I watched things happen as a child in school. I thought the South was just another place. My mother would say, no, it's not. It's because people are black. My father would say, oh, yes, it is. That's why we're not there, or something smart like that. But in Chicago, you saw the unpeeling of another kind of racism, a very ingrained, in-depth racism in Chicago that I'm not so sure that everybody knew existed. As we know, as it is still today, Chicago is the most segregated country in America, segregated city in America. But people just go their separate ways. You go to your Bridgeport, you go to your Inglewood, you go to Hyde Park, you go to wherever you go, and that's just a comfort of our lives. It's just our culture. But Dr. King saw something different. He saw the segregation. He saw the injustices. When Dr. King came here, as Al can explain probably better than I, you saw the schools, you saw the Willis wagons, you saw contract buying on the West Side. You saw blacks unable to buy housing anywhere in spite of what their income levels might have been. So you indeed saw the racism. And so what Dr. King did in his move here is he challenged again the racism. Now, the result of what he did, as he did change open housing, as he did change our school system, but the real result was he also changed our politics. That was the beginning of an independent
and
politics.
As you mentioned, you had a piece today in Indigo just about a lot of that centered around the politics of the Democratic machine, especially here in Chicago, and the former mayor, Richard J. Daley. Not an easy task to get into a public dispute with the mayor of Chicago at that time.
Not easy to get in a dispute with the mayor, but also there were six aldermen. They were called the Silent Six, six black aldermen who also resisted King. There were the ministers where Dr. King's pulpit was always welcomed into the churches. And those ministers, many of the big ministers resisted Dr. King. There were only a few churches that he could go into. One was Clay Evans' Fellowship. The other was Pilgrim on King Drive. And so his voice was trying to be limited. And they were really saying, go back home. We don't need you here. We don't have those issues here. And Dr. King was saying, oh, yes, you do. Let and me. As you know, you had marches. One of the biggest marches we've ever had was at Soldiers Field. And so he conquered daily. And depending on how you look at it, short term, long term, but in the long term, he indeed conquered daily and changed the politics of Chicago.
Let me bring in Reverend Sampson. Being the former housing director for the SCLC, you had a big role in Chicago freedom movement in 1966, but also just knowing Chicago and bringing housing options to the African-American community here in Chicago. What Hermine was talking about, is that resonate with you, this idea of what Chicago was like in the 60s when King came here and brought the message that we were seeing on television sets and radio stations in the South to Chicago in the North?
Yes, and most people don't realize that Dr. King coming out of Atlanta, what they call L.A., lovely Atlanta, there was a man named Q.V. Williamson who had a black real estate office along with an organization in Atlanta. Jet Magazine picked it up as Peyton Place. And when he got to Chicago and realized that black folk in the lovely Mecca of Chicago, with all of its business capabilities and opportunities and institutions, but they couldn't go past 63rd Street. Well, we looked at Robert's Motel at that time and realized that we were living in and staying in segregated housing. And so I lived with Dr. King on the west side of Chicago at 1550 South Hamlin Avenue. And it was there that we came with our staff and started what we call In the Slums. We had a button that is now a book entitled The Rise of the Phoenix Bird. And the whole idea was giving people help and giving them hope. I went to Europe and looked at industrialized housing systems, and we ended up with a brother named Ed Billingsley, who worked with Community Renewal Society, and he built on 53rd and Carter's Grove. It still stands there now, 221D3 housing. We went during the Gene Sawyer days, and Bill Henry on the west side. We went to Napanee, Indiana, and that's when they were manufacturing housing. And sometime, Brother Coughlin, I'll take you over there and show you the house that we brought from Napanee, Indiana, because Gene Sawyer, former Mayor Gene Sawyer, had his building department people go to Napanee, Indiana. And I went and I met with them. And, you know, it was a strange experience for me. And I said to them, I'm not trying to marry your daughter. I love the fact that as craftsmen, you have the ability to produce these houses. And then there was another man named Bill Spathis that built a whole lot of housing on the west side of Chicago, but he built the first one across the street from my church. The difference is inside the factory, it was $30 a square foot. Stick built $50 a square foot.
Reverend Al Sampson, Dr. Al Sampson, and also Hermine Hartman are on the line right now. What I need to do real quick is just I want to check the roads, and if we can take a quick break, so and we'll continue the conversation as we remember King's movement here in Chicago, but also talk about reflections on the day, the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. King in Memphis. We'll take a let's do this. We'll check in with Steve Resanders to see what's coming up in the 8 o'clock news, and then we'll get an update on the roads with Mary. We'll come back to the conversation, guys.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Steve Cochran Show here. Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran. On the line with me, Hermine Hartman, who is, of course, the publisher and founder of Indigo Magazine. And Reverend Dr. Al Sampson, who's the pastor at Fernwood United Methodist Church in Chicago. Of course, today, the 50th anniversary of the death of Martin Luther King Jr., assassinated at a Memphis hotel on April 4th, 1968. We were talking about Chicago, and you know we're limited in time, but I wanted to ask you guys, of course, a lot of the aftermath is remembered by Chicagoans, what happened on the west side of Chicago, south side of Chicago, when it came to the riots that ensued after, and some of the things that were said by the mayor of Chicago, and just the way it kind of all played out. But when you think about what happened 50 years ago today and the weeks that will be coming up here, How do you see history viewing this? How when you think of the 50-year anniversary, does everyone have the same and the right recollections of what happened here in April of 1968?
No, King's death was devastating to America. Now we mourn, and there was violent breakouts all over the country, as you might remember. Windows were broken, things were stole, urban America went up in flames. There has been no restoration in Chicago on the west side where that burning took place. Daley issued an order, shoot to kill, aim to maim, as the city really got out of control. National Guards had to be brought in. I think 6,000 National Guards were brought in to kind of calm the storm. But people were hurt. People were angry. Jesse Jackson said in an interview at that time, white America just lost their very best friend at the assassination of Dr. King. The Kerner Report was issued also 50 years ago, saying that there were two Americas, one black, one white, and talked about the racial divide. Some of those, has progress been made? Indeed, progress has been made. But the core of racism is still very existent. We see the president of the United States today just dividing this country so, and not uniting. Dr. King was a uniter. We see divide now. It's changed. We've had a black president. Dr. King's change was very specific. He knew what he wanted. Goals were set, targets were established, and he went for it. When we say change, now every politician in America running now is talking about change, but we don't know what the change is, from what to what. So there's in retrospect, the dream has not been fulfilled.
Reverend Sampson, I'll give you the last word here as we wrap up our conversation. When you think about Chicago, but you also think about the aftermath 50 years ago, what has been King's legacy, and has it been fulfilled?
Well, I think his legacy has been a process. In his last words, He said, I might not get there, but we as a people, and I really believe all over the world, and especially the world in Chicago, Atlanta, we just saw the power historically of the right to vote and how we struggle in the midst of the oppressing of the vote. We've got a whole lot more congresspersons and state legislators and county folk than what we had before. We do a program called Soul Slate Political Action Committee, mm-hmm. where we print people's pictures and punch numbers, because a lot of people vote at the top of the ticket, but they don't know about the judges and the other officers at the bottom of the ticket. The genius of Dr. King is that he left us tools of what I call liberation. It is a challenge to the black church on what I call the economic blueprint of liberation, how we ought to look at the world economically.
Reverend Sampson, sorry to cut you off. We got to wrap up here. But Reverend Dr. Al Sampson, the pastor at Fernwood United Methodist Church in Chicago, and Hermine Hartman, the publisher at Indigo Magazine, both joining us to talk about the anniversary of the death of Martin Luther King Jr. Hope to continue the conversation with both of you at a later time. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Stay strong.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood, you know I love you more.
Time for Dean Richards, sponsored by brand new Smile Dental Implant Center. Dean Richards, of course, the great Dean Richards, the famed... I would call you, but I would call you Hall of Fame. I just feel like there's a lot of famed.
Yeah.
You've got so much.
Yeah, I don't have any Hall of Fames right now. No, I have Walk of Fame.
Walk of Fame, but you've got like a Silver Circle.
As far as I know, soon our Walk of Fame will be in front of the Magnificent Mile's most famous mattress store.
Good to talk to you, Dean. How are you?
How great would that be? If our showcase studio window became a mattress store on Michigan Avenue.
I'm hoping for... I have in the pool a Taco Bell. We get a Taco Bell on Michigan Avenue.
That also would be nice.
That'd be nice.
That also would be very nice.
Yeah. Well, at least you could pay somebody, maybe out of pocket, to keep your plaque clean.
Yeah, I don't know what the... I don't know what they're going to... I don't know if those are going to be moved, if those are going to stay.
Yeah, I think they're... I think
they're just going to be, ripped from the ground.
Yeah.
Because if that's the case, I want my plaque so I can wear it around my neck.
Flavor Flav stuff.
Yeah, Flavor Flav.
I heard they're being moved, Dean.
Hey, boy.
Do you have any advice for Mary? Mary has just been inducted to the Walk of Fame. She will be up here in May. Congratulations, Mary. That's
thank
awesome.
You so much. Absolutely. Any advice, Dean?
Yeah, Dean, do you have advice for Mary?
If you do as I do, I go out there every day and clean the spit and cigarette butts out of it.
Oh, I make Dave Annette do that. Yeah.
Which is why he's not here right now.
Yeah, he's out there doing that,
right? Nothing nicer than looking out the window and seeing someone walking their German Shepherd over your Walk of Fame plaque.
Mary, are they even going to bother putting yours in?
They said no.
Okay, so
because we're moving. Yes,
because we're moving. So they just don't know where they're
going to
go.
So that must mean are they going to the new place? Are they?
I think it was undecided.
Undecided. Yeah. Last I heard. Hmm. Anyway.
Well, I do like the necklace idea.
I do like that.
Think about that. All right, let's get to
Walk of Fame, boy. Weighs like 50 pounds.
Entertainment news. Jared Leto in town.
He
saw a clip of him singing at the Willis Tower.
Well, he was singing. First of all, he shows up at Willis Tower last night, like about 8:30. We knew that he was coming because he's doing this cross-country tour, I guess you might say, by plane, train, automobile. He's even hitchhiking across America promoting a new album for his group, 30 Seconds to Mars. Yeah. So up at the Sky Deck at Willis Tower, some fans were assembled up there. And he shows up and he sang a song, 30 Seconds to Mars song. And the fans got into it. He passed out tickets to an upcoming concert. But he is, I assume that he stayed in Chicago last night and is headed to Dallas today. The ultimate goal is to hit Los Angeles by Friday. That's when the new album called Mars Across America will come out. But,
it makes me think about the old days of going to the Ambassador Hotel, taking the train in,
right?
You know, and then going to the Ambassador to hang out with Cup,
right? Booth one. He's in. Yeah, I wonder how Cup would have dealt with Jared Leto. Jared Leto. He's in a parka. He's in jeans. He's Jared Leto. You know, he's got that look about him.
Have you been with him in person?
I have many times. He could not be nicer.
He is.
Sandra's beaming.
I'm a big Jared Leto fan. Back from the Jordan Catalano days.
Oh wow!
My so-called life. And are his eyes as dreamy?
His eyes are that dreamy.
That's good to hear.
I gotta say,
the long hair looks a little bit dirty, but I know that's his look. That when you have great hair, you can let it be dirty and messy.
No, you should never. Is it bad that the last time I saw him, I brought him some Prel? Is that a bad thing to bring to somebody?
No, that's what you do in the business.
Still not the dirtiest celebrity I've ever talked to, or nor stinkiest.
No.
Who is that?
Do you smell and tell?
It was another musician.
Lenny Kravitz? Oh, I know. Sting.
Because we talked about this once before. Stinkiest.
He's doing all that tantric yoga, so.
Clearly does not believe in deodorant. Whatever. That's.
I had a roommate that thought deodorant caused breast cancer, and so she did that natural deodorant thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is not working for you. And she'd want to borrow my clothes, and I couldn't allow it because she smelled. No. And even when you got things dry cleaned, it didn't go away from the dresses.
No.
It was awful.
No, you got to soak that in tomato juice like when you get hit by a skunk.
I love that Jared Leto has turned us into a hygiene conversation.
Let me tell you another thing about this roommate of mine. She pretended to eat really healthy, but then I like chili cheese Fritos. I just eat a couple, but they're one of my favorite snacks. She would eat them at night, and she would fold the bag differently, so I knew she was eating them, and she would deny it, and it made me crazy.
Oh, yeah.
But I know because I tucked the bag in like a little... So nothing spills out, and she would just roll it. I'm like, stop eating the Fritos, or admit it at least, so I know, you know. And then she's like, I'm not touching them. It's like, you're not even folding the bag correctly. So anyway,
Sandberg waking up at 6 a.m. counting the Fritos.
I know. I'm so crazy.
89, 90, 91, 92.
You of all people should never have had a roommate, Mary.
I know. I'm not a roommate type.
I like it. I know we want to talk about what's coming up this weekend. Classics coming to the big screen. Colin Farrell, some rehab news. But I want to stick with the roommates. Sandberg's
roommates.
Roommate.
And stinky celebrities.
Let's do this real quick, though. Let's
I can tell you who the dirtiest celebrity is.
Ooh.
After the break.
After the break. There it is. That's the tease. That's why you're in the Walk of Fame, Dean. Right there. The dirty tease.
Yo, Walk of Fame boy.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 972. Top man, pro and steady. To the man, because he's always ready. East Coast to the West Coast.
Dean Richards on the line, of course, joins us every 8 o'clock, every morning 8 o'clock, and you can hear him Sundays as well.
And 8 a.m. and 8 p.m.
You can see him everywhere. Dean is Mr. WGN.
My dad calls him the hardest working man in entertainment. Like, he works every day of the week, 24/7.
And twice on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly back-breaking work, I might add.
No,
I appreciate, but
those seats.
Some
at
people
the screening
have actual
room.
Jobs for a living and are shoveling stuff.
The seats at the screening rooms that you go to, they're old, they're beat up. So it can be backbreaking.
Hearing people eat.
Yeah,
they were old when I first started going there back in the Gene and Roger days.
Who's the dirtiest celebrity, Dean?
The one that I wanted to make him go take a shower before I sat down and interview with him. Was one time married to Angelina Jolie.
Mm. Oh, Billy Bob Thornton?
Mm-mm.
No, not Brad.
Brad?
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yeah, but that's a style. That's a scene. That's a whole thing.
Right.
He's dirty as a thing.
Because he can.
Because he can be.
I'm Brad Pitt.
I'm Brad Pitt. I'm so dirty.
I don't know what soap is.
That doesn't work for a guy like Justin. Like, I try that look. They're like, it's not happening, buddy.
Andy Mazur's like that. A lot of people don't know.
Yeah, he knows that. That's why you don't let me down in the studio on Sundays.
Make him stay upstairs.
Yeah, that's all again.
A couple classics coming to the big screen. What do you got?
Everybody's, of course, focusing on the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King right now, but also 50 years ago, 2001, A Space Odyssey was first released, the Stanley Kubrick film. And when it first came out, it was not successful at all when it first came out. People, just found it too weird. It finally found an audience, kind of a cult audience with college students and people who may have been, experimenting with some pharmaceutical products back in the day. But, it eventually became one of the most renowned movies of all time. And in May, they're going to re-release it into theaters. Unrestored 70mm. So visually, it should be pretty cool to see. And I was just watching the trailer earlier this morning. It's very interesting how the technology that they used in that movie is kind of outdated by, you know, technology that we use now in many ways.
I watched that Spielberg documentary on the plane, the one he did on HBO about his career, and he talked a lot about, there was a point that we're talking about that movie being an inspiration for him. So
I can imagine for, you know, young filmmakers at that time. There's also a Spielberg story that just came out that there is a possibility with this new Indiana Jones movie that they're going to make. It's not confirmed yet, but there's a possibility, says Spielberg, that Indiana Jones could be a woman.
Oh, I love that.
It's a great idea.
I think it's a fantastic
idea. Margot Robbie. That's who I'm throwing her hat in the ring.
Fantastic choice.
That is, yeah. Colin Farrell in rehab?
Say it ain't so.
Well, he's had a long history of being in and out of rehab and a long history of drug use. He's made no secret that drug and alcohol abuse. But he just yesterday checked himself into the Meadows Rehab Center, which is in Arizona. Lots of famous people have sought help there. He has checked himself in what is being called preemptively as he wants to reset his life. The sources close to him say that he's not using right now, but you know, just as kind of, you know, going in for like a touch up, I guess you might say, just to kind of reset all the dials. So
yeah,
good for him. That's a terrible, terrible thing to deal with. So good for him for continuing trying.
And this, and to wrap up, WGN TV is celebrating 70 years. We talked to Tom Skilling about this yesterday with Roe, but
he was here on the first day. Tom Skilling.
this is a big deal. You guys are celebrating 70 years. This is something that obviously has been talked about a lot this week with Chicago's very own. But talk about this is going to be a big production for the station.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. We've been running clips all week of you know, the history of WGN. I mean, few TV stations in the country have the kind of history that we do, and if I may say so, connects more effectively with its community. Chicago's very own is a lot more than just a slogan to us. You know, we live it, we breathe it. You know, most of the people I think that work here are Chicago natives. So it means something to us to, you know, be proud of the place that we work, and you know, certainly proud of the history of what WGN has put on the air in news and sports and all kinds of different avenues. I do a section. We have a 1-hour special that's on tomorrow night at 8:00. Oddly enough, on this very station, WGN TV.
Oddly,
we couldn't. We tried to get it on Channel 7. They wouldn't go for it. Turns out, but it's going to be tomorrow night at 8:00,
all right.
and all of us contribute to this. I do a section on children's programming of the great kids shows that we all grew up with on Channel 9.
The amount of time you get in the special, is it based on the length you've been at the station?
Well, it would be mostly the Tom Skilling show, because he's the host of the whole thing. Tom is, we all revolve around Tom and talk about our little areas of expertise.
Nice.
Dean Richards, of course, heard here on Sundays, but also every single morning at 8:00 here on Steve Cochran's show. Dean, thanks for taking some time.
All right, Justin, see you later, bud.
All right, there you go. Coming up, we're going to talk with the coach and general manager of the Chicago Sky, the WNBA franchise here in Chicago. Amber Stocks will be in studio, so we'll talk about what's coming up. Of course, a surge in interest and popularity when it comes to women's basketball after an amazing NCAA tournament.
Crazy Final Four.
Congrats to Notre Dame. We'll have that coming up.
Ogunbowale. National championship for Notre Dame.
Kobe said that you hadn't completed the job yet. What do you have to say to Kobe now?
It's over. The job is over.
You
Mama
guys
mentality.
Are looking at the goal right here. Shout out Kobe. That's 2 in a row.
Shout out Kobe.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Justin Coffin in for Steve Cochran this morning. What a great moment, Andy Mazur. The Final Four, of course, we're hearing right there. It's Notre Dame wins the women's tournament. And, of course, the amazing athleticism and of course, the thrilling end to to both the games, the Notre Dame beating Connecticut and Mississippi State. You hope that that popularity and the surge continues as the WNBA season is just around the corner. The draft comes up here on April 12th. In studio this morning, Amber Stocks is the coach and general manager of the Chicago Sky. I guess we call you Coach Stocks, or do we call you, I'm not sure. We'll just say, Amber, welcome to the program.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, so let's talk, before we get into this, you know, obviously the popularity of the NCAA Women's Tournament this year, to see Connecticut lose, but also to see Notre Dame just do it in such thrilling fashion, both games, that has to have an impact on the optimism for the WNBA season coming forward, not just for, you know, the idea of continuing, but that such great players could be coming out of the college and into the pros.
Yeah, I mean, it's great basketball that we saw last weekend at the Final Four. It's just quality plays, big time shots, great plays from all four teams. And then now, fans of the sport of basketball, if you like good basketball, you're going to like watching these college players transition into the pros. And with the talent of this senior class, they're going to be impact players playing impact minutes as rookies in the WNBA.
Right, and I guess I'll follow up with that. This is a big, not only a big season for the WNBA, but a big season for the Chicago Sky, because that you're moving to the Wintrust Arena down by McCormick. This is a new arena. You have been at the Allstate Arena for years. Talk about what that means for the franchise to have a new arena and to have it in Chicago.
Oh, the energy. It's exciting to be in the city. It's exciting to be at Wintrust, right by McCormick Place. The energy is contagious. Everybody likes to win. Everybody wants to win in Chicago, right? So when we take all that energy for winning, everybody's competitive, and we pack it into Wintrust Arena, opposing teams are not going to want to come play here.
Yeah, you got to build that home court advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious, too. I mean, you're taking on two roles. How difficult is that to kind of worry about the roster itself and then coach the roster?
So as a coach, we're always looking for the wins for this season. And as the general manager, you're looking for more long-term sustained success. And so there's always a balance between, okay, what decision impacts us immediately versus what decision helps our long-term progress as a franchise. So there's always that balance. But it's kind of like when your child says, Mom, can I have $5? And you say, no, go ask your dad. Well, it's kind of like, well, Coach, can we have such and such? No, go ask the GM. Oh, that's me too.
Well, this is, I mean, the Chicago Sky, I mean, it's an amazing run for the team. The team was in the playoffs of pretty much its entire existence until last season. Is the big headline, of course, the trade of Elena Delladon before the 2017 season. You know, as being a general manager, there really is a lot on you to rebuild a team that really was centered around Elena, what she was doing here in town. She became a national celebrity. How difficult is it to rebuild a franchise, a roster, when you lose a superstar or trade a superstar like Elena Delano?
Well, for us, it's all working out perfectly. So the trade allowed us to acquire a two-time All-Star in Stephanie Dolson, allowed us to acquire a phenomenal talent, young talent in Kalia Copper, and Elena Coates, who will be with us at center as well. So we added some size and some impact scoring around the rim. We added a dynamic athletic player on the perimeter. So three players who have the potential to be WNBA All-Stars were all acquired to the Sky with that trade. So it was a great trade, and it's really allowed us to now focus on a team aspect of basketball, moving the ball around. Last year, we not only led the league in assists, but set a WNBA record for most assists by a team ever in the history of the league, and that's how we play. We don't just go through one player. We move the ball, and everybody gets touches and looks.
There's a lot of expectation for the squad because Elena Coates, who was the overall number two last year, she didn't play at all. I mean, she had an ankle injury. She was out. She will be back and with the team. You have two first-round picks, the overall number three and number four, due to a trade with Atlanta. It gives you a lot of flexibility to go and get talent. What is the pressing need? Do you look at the draft and say best player available, or are you looking specifically at a type of player that fits into this team, what you guys are trying to put on the court with this guy?
At this juncture, we aren't in desperation mode. So we have great players, Courtney Vandersloot, Allie Quigley, and the players I mentioned. So we've got great players already. We need to bring in players who will complement our style of play. You know how it is, whether it's, you know, you go out there and play rec ball or you go play in the church league or whatever it is, everyone's not going to be a fit, whether it's your pickup team. You know, the guy that maybe drains a lot of threes. Yeah, we want him on our squad, but is he really going to help us win this game? And so we want the players who are going to fit with our team to win games.
How do you do that? I mean, as a general manager, what's the process that goes into looking at the players that are coming into the draft? I mean, is it similar to other sports like football or you know, I think football specifically where there's a combine, but then there's also interviews where people come to. How do you deal with the rookies that are in the draft and assessing them before the draft?
Extremely similar to what the NFL has in place. There's events where we go watch the prospective draftees play. But of course, prior to that, you know, we've watched them during their college seasons, going to practices, going to the games, spending a lot of time, of course, on the analytics, looking at the numbers, you know, doing all that, you know, I like to tease and, you know, I kind of get nerdy a little bit with the numbers, but that's okay.
Really?
I do. And then, of course, talking to the players themselves, getting them on the phone, getting them in person, sitting down face to face or, you know, whatever it may be, and asking them some questions, getting to know them. Can this player play for me? Now, I like to think I'm the easiest coach to play for. However, you know, a couple times the players have said, maybe, you know, I kind of get a little intense. So is this player not only going to fit well with this team, but is this athlete going to fit well with me?
Yeah, I was curious, you mentioned about the assists and also three-point field goals were a big part of what you guys did last year. You know, knowing that you were going to acquire and get some inside help, was it a big key to develop the perimeter last year and then move into the fact that you're going to have some inside presence this year?
100%.
Okay.
I mean, we are basic basketball, inside out. You know, you get the ball inside, defense sinks in, it opens up the court for your shooters, right? It's simple. Well, we had a kind of a double whammy with that in that Stephanie Dolson, our starting center, not only was it inside presence at the rim, but she can knock down threes and deep threes. Let's not forget the game where she hit that buzzer three to send us into overtime against LA, and then the game where we beat LA at Staples Center because our center of all people hits the game-winning buzzer three.
Amber Stocks is in studio. She is the coach and general manager of the Chicago Sky. The draft coming up on April 12th. Let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll see what's coming up in the news, and we'll continue our conversation with Amber Stocks and talk specifically about what we can expect from the Sky here in 2018.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran this morning. In studio with us, Amber Stocks. She is the coach general manager of the WNBA's Chicago Sky. Of course, the Sky having their 2018 season in a new building, the Wintrust Arena, right here next to McCormick Place. And this is a big season because even though last season was the first in, is it Sky history that they didn't make the playoffs? There are a lot of the arrows are pointing up. Of course, the overall number two last year didn't play at all. The team actually surged towards the end of the season and gelled after a tough beginning. But also two first round, number three and number four draft picks coming up here on April 12th for the WNBA's draft. That plays into the fact that a lot of people in the industry are picking the Chicago Sky to move in back into the playoffs. What do you, I mean, there's a lot of great talent out there. And I think about what we just saw in the NCAA tournament, and ESPN has been a huge player when it comes to highlighting the UConn team, the team that went undefeated, coverage of the Final Four in the NCAA Women's Tournament. There are a lot of players that are going to have name recognition. Azaree Stevens is one who mm-hmm. came out early. She's a junior. She came out. They're already saying she may be the overall number one or could even be available when the Sky draft at 3 and 4. There are a lot more players that have name recognition thanks to the media coverage. Does that play? Do you have to think about that as the Chicago Sky to get people to get butts in seats to people watch that you want to get one of these players that has been on a major program that people know and have name recognition to?
Well, once again, that's a great question, Justin. So the coach perspective or the general manager perspective? You know, and there are different thought processes that go into that. But I will say, I specifically, both as GM and as head coach, look at what kind of program these athletes have come from. What kind of style are they used to playing? And so, you know, with a Connecticut player, you're going to get a certain type of leader. And, you know, go back to the first trade that, you know, that I made as soon as I jumped on board, acquiring Stephanie Dolson as
UConn center.
She's got the leadership, the experience, been in championship settings. She's a winner. She's got that competitive drive. So you know when you get certain players from certain types of programs, you're going to get that. Take DePaul, for example. You know when you have a player that's played at DePaul with Coach Bruno, they're going to know the game. They're going to play hard. They're going to know different defensive schemes. That you know that they're going to pass the ball and move the ball well because DePaul plays such a team-style defense. So there's certain types of...
Well, that's great for the coach. But for the general manager, do you have to think about the star power? Do you have to think about name recognition, someone you could put on the marquee to say, come see Azaree Stevens at the Wintrust Arena this summer?
I don't think about that. I believe that in Chicago, we like winning teams, and we want to know that our team is winning. Our team, hence team, is winning. And so, you know, here in Chicago, we want championships. And if we have a star power, you know, player and the championship comes, even better. But regardless of the star player, we want championships in Chicago.
In general terms, I mean, you see when the U.S. women's hockey team takes a gold medal, you see a lot more young ladies getting involved in hockey. You know, you see teams like Connecticut and teams like Notre Dame now, and now with the recognition of the WNBA, have you seen an uptick in that kind of situation where younger girls are starting to play more basketball?
The WNBA is great for young girls and young boys, kids in general. I am the mom of two boys, and what this league has done to impact the lives of my sons is unspeakable. They advocate for, you know, other kids in their classes who might not have somebody to stick up for them. It's showed my boys just different type of, hey, I'm biased, but it showed them different type of women that set a standard for them. Like, okay, look, these are the women that have it together. These are the type of women that you know, my boys are going to look at like, okay, I might kind of want to get down with the female athlete when I grow up and, you know, partner up, have her as my friend, have her in my circle, you know, have her as my running buddy.
Yeah. Amber Stocks is the coach and general manager of the Chicago Sky. We look forward to the April 12th draft, the overall number 3 and number 4, and of course the season, which will be the first at the Wintrust Arena down by McCormick Place here in Chicago. Great to meet you. Thanks for being here, and we look forward to Chicago Sky basketball this summer.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
It's Steve Cochran's show. Justin Kaufman in for Steve today. Steve will be back tomorrow as we do our opening day program. The opening day for the Chicago White Sox at home at Guaranteed Rate Field. Steve, Andrea, Dave, they'll all be down at Guaranteed Rate. I'll be here in studio and looking forward to a good show about White Sox baseball starting up here in Chicago if they play or don't play. Of course, there is going. It's not necessarily baseball weather in Chicago right now, and there's even forecast for snow tomorrow, right when the game kicks off. But we'll see if we get it in or what happens here in Chicago. It's April. That's what happens with baseball in April. Much more to come this hour. Patrick Sharp's going to join us. Breakfast with the Blackhawk. We'll talk with him about what he's going to do with his April. Usually, Patrick Sharp, of course, plays in the playoffs. This year, the Hawks not going to the playoffs, so we'll talk about that. And then Walter Jacobson will also be on the program to talk about the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. and covering Chicago and the aftermath of that assassination and 68 riots. So we'll talk with Walter coming up here in the 9 o'clock hour. Well, now let's talk with an organization called Parents for Peace and Justice. They're on the front lines of the violence epidemic in Chicago. They fight for peace and justice, of course, but providing anti-violence programs and therapy for those in need. In studio with us is Robert Torres and Elizabeth Ramirez. They're the co-founders, Robert Torres, as well as the executive director. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
This is going to be an issue, of course. This is an issue that is constant in the city of Chicago. It always is on everybody's minds. And, of course, as we get close to the spring and summer, it becomes a national story as the numbers continue. Let's talk about why you get involved with Parents for Peace and Justice. It's both important because it's an important organization, important need for the city of Chicago, but it's also a personal story for you, Elizabeth. Talk about why you started Parents for Peace and Justice.
We started Parents for Peace and Justice because October 23rd of 2011, I lost my son to the violence at his own birthday party. My son gave his life for two other lives. My son he graduated from high school, was going to college because he wanted to become a coach. As I started going crazy on Facebook, trying to get someone to hear me, to help me out, to get justice for my son. That's where I met Robert Torres through Facebook, and we started talking and started doing vigils. We started doing vigils in a community where there was involvement with drugs and gang activities. And as I see so many kids standing with their parents in these corners of these vigils, it touched my heart to see these kids there. And I told Robert, you know, Robert, we have to do something for our kids because it's not about us. It's about our children. You know, I look at these kids and I wonder how summer's not even here and the violence already mm-hmm. started. You know, we got to think about the kids. We got to think about how would their summer be? So we need activities for the kids.
Well, obviously, you know, it's a personal story for you as a parent, and I'm condolences on your loss. I also think about it, though, as so many people who listen in Chicago are unaffected by violence or may know it's happening but don't have the impetus to be engaged to try and stop it or to go for a world of peace and justice, as you're talking about. How do you get people who haven't had the personal experience, Elizabeth, to understand that this is an epidemic and there is a way for them to get involved and to deal with this issue?
The only thing we do is talk to them and let them know the way we feel, what had happened to our children, that we don't want their children for that to happen to their children. And we let them know that they need to get involved. You know, like telling them that it's not about us. It's about your child. You need to get involved in your child's life. You know, And you have to show your children love, too. There's a lot of kids lost in the streets because there's no love at home.
Well, that Robert, I want to bring you in here because you'll hear that a lot. I mean, you hear about what is actually at the center of this epidemic, and talk about gang activity, of course. But there always will be what's happening in the home and other places, and parents sometimes unfairly are given the brunt of what's happening, especially when there are people who are, you know, just shooting other people in gangs, and they talk about where were the parents. You know, when you have this movement to get parents involved in how we can bring peace to the city of Chicago, how important is it to address the issues of what's happening in the home?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, it definitely starts at home. We truly believe that parenting is important. But understand that also a lot of these children in our community, don't have that father figure. So, which once again, they're looking for that mentor, they're looking for that leader. And that's why for us, that's where we started to listen to the need in the community. And as we were doing these vigils in the community, we started to learn more from the mothers and families, and specifically from the children, that the need for, you know, programs, resources, and jobs. And we heard it over and over and over again. And that's when we said, hey, we have to go to work, and we have to provide those programs, we have to provide those resources, and we have to help with jobs. And what we started to do is zoom in more on the programs, and we kept on hearing over and over again is the need for sports programs, right? And in arts and music. So that's where we started.
How do you accomplish that? How do you make that happen in communities that are in need?
Well, we met 2 years ago. We were blessed to meet a great friend of ours, which is Tom Feeks. He's the president and owner of Pro Sports Experience. And he was at one of our events, and when he saw how affected these mothers were to violence, and when I knew what he does and which of sports, so what Pro Sports Experience does, it was just like the bells and whistles went off and said, listen, I've been looking for a guy like you to help us with sports program in a community. And that's where Tom Finks went to work. And we partnered up, and we started for the last 2 years. We've been bringing Chicago Bears youth flag football into the community. And for the very first time last year, we had also the Leadership Bowl at our community, where we bus kids from Green Bay representing the Green Bay Packers, and we had kids from Chicago representing the Chicago Bears, and we let them play and gave them a platform. But once again, giving them a safe zone, having them in our hands, and creating change with them.
Elizabeth, you know, for the story that you told about your son and his own birthday party being shot and killed. And you think about the work that you've done since and being a part of this organization, Parents for Peace and Justice. What does it mean to you to have a purpose, to be in a position where you can use your son's legacy to help others and to be in a position where you can spread the idea of peace to Chicago neighborhoods?
I know for one thing for sure that this is something that he would want me to do. To help the kids, because he was one that used to help kids. Like I said, he loved sports. And he, even himself, he was able to remove a couple of kids from the corners. He had a passion for sports, you know, and I could talk about my son's story to other kids, and they'll listen to me. And there was a young guy that was involved, also got involved with the with sports. My son went to Blackhawk Park, KB Park, also for sports, and his main thing was football. So there's a lot of kids that love football, and they're following us. Mm. Every time I see a child, like in the summer playing with football, they want to get involved. It puts a smile on my face because that's something they love. You know, it's not keeping them where the trouble is at. It's like they feel safe because they're playing something positive, nothing negative. And we want to continue to do this for the kids, yeah, because there's a lot of kids that need us out there.
Well, the website is parentsforpeaceandjustice.org. You can find out more about the organization and what you can do to help. Elizabeth Ramirez and Robert Torres are the co-founders, and they're in studio today. Robert, Elizabeth, thanks so much for coming in. And Elizabeth, thanks for sharing the story of your son. And thanks for putting together Parents for Peace and Justice. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Through center ice over the shark line to the left circle. Gustafson pinching to the left corner. Did it break it behind the net? Put it in front. Sharp shoots. He scores! Patrick Sharp off of a beautiful setup from the Cat. Sharp let it rip from the slot. And Jones got a piece of it, but it deflected over the goal line and into the back of the shark net. And we're tied at three. The veteran Patrick Sharp coming through.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with the Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
Not just any Blackhawk, we're talking about one of the best. Patrick Sharp joins us on the line for Breakfast with the Blackhawk. Patrick Sharp, thanks for being here. Appreciate it, buddy.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. So, of course, we have our listener question. We'll get to that in just a second. My question for you, do you have special April plans? You're not used to having time off coming up here for the playoffs. But in all seriousness, what does it mean for you as a player to be in a situation where you haven't been in the last 6 or 7 years, where you don't have the playoffs to look forward to?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's an unfamiliar situation for a lot of guys in our locker room, and it's kind of disappointing when you think about it. Playing the 82 games is such a grind. You want to get through it healthy. You want to get through it as best you can, and you want to gear up for playoffs at the right time. And obviously, we're not doing that this year, so we're going to have a little extra time on our hands. But the amount of hockey that some of these guys have played in our locker room, maybe it can be a good thing going forward. You know, get healthy, get rested, do some training, and have a better season next year.
Yeah, Patrick, you always look for silver linings in seasons that are tough and kind of up and down. And I'm curious to get your thoughts about DeBrincat, because you guys have played on the line together. You set up his first goal, and he just returned the favor, as we heard in that highlight. But what's it been like playing with him?
Yeah, it's about time he returned the favor, right?
Really?
No, it's been great playing with him. It's been great hanging out with him on and off the ice. He's a young kid that's got a mind for the game. He loves talking hockey. He always wants to get better. He's got the skill and ability that we can all see in the game, and the numbers he's putting up at a young age is pretty special. So you could name him. You could name Nick Schmaltz, I think, had a good year, who's a very promising player going forward. There's a handful of guys in our locker room that you can really get excited about, and think over the off season with some training and some regrouping, the team can bounce back.
You know, for you, it's interesting. I was reading Mark Lazarus' book, and he talked about how in the early days, your rookie season, they sent you out to the metro stations to hand out free tickets for the Blackhawks, and people didn't know who you were. It's a very, very interesting to think about that now. But as you know, another part that he said in the book was that, and this just came out recently, that players from around the league, they actually don't like to come to Chicago and play anymore because it's such a hostile environment. That wasn't always the case, and you're a perfect guy to ask this question, because when you started, it's much different than it is today at the United Center.
Yeah, it is. I'm not sure who those players are, because I think Chicago is a top place to play in the league, and that's the reason why I'm back here playing for the Hawks. It's great to play at the United Center, 22,000 fans every night. Times have changed from 2005 until now when I got started. Yeah, Duncan, Keith, and I wore our red Blackhawks jerseys, went down to the train station, and we're passing out free tickets to games, and we still couldn't get anybody's attention back then. I think times have changed, and if the two of us did that now, it would be a little bit different.
Yeah, but, right.
that's what makes things so great about Chicago is the relationship with the fan base, and it's disappointing that we couldn't have a better year for them this year, but you know, I think Chicago is one of the best places to play.
I hear that all the time from you guys, talking about disappointment and you know, how the season has played out, because there are a lot of teams in Chicago and other sports that don't make the playoffs, or maybe they don't do it as often as the Blackhawks do, and you don't necessarily hear the players talking about disappointment or letting down the fans. I mean, that relationship is special between Blackhawks players and Blackhawks fans. Talk about that and why I hear over and over the players talk about the word disappointment.
It's not every day you can have a full building from start to finish. I mean, going back to September, the training camp game, red against white, the inter-squad game, we had a full building. You know, everywhere we go on the road, there's red and white jerseys in the stands supporting us. You know, the fan base is deep in Chicago. You feel it as a player. It has a very family vibe as far as, like, we're all in this together. And it's disappointing when we don't hit your expectations or you don't hit your goals. So, you know, it's been a tough season. It's been a frustrating season, but there has been some positives, as we mentioned earlier, and hopefully we can build on those as a group and be better in the future.
All right, let's get our listener question in. This one's from Andrew Pendelski from Illinois. He asks, what do you look to work on during the offseason? Do you have the same offseason regimen, or do you adjust depending on how you played the previous year?
Yeah, I think everyone's different. I think everybody looks to adjust based on how they're feeling, the age of the player, you know, injuries, where the game is going. So, you know, we've got this great new facility in Chicago, the MB Financial Arena. The place is awesome. It's got every training tool that you could ask for as a hockey player. So I think there's going to be a lot of guys from the team that spend a little more time in Chicago in the off-season training at that facility. We got a great strength coach, Paul Goodman, and that's going to put us through some stuff. But everybody's different. You know, I think some guys like to get away, clear their minds, whether that's spend time with their family and friends or golf or go on vacation, whatever. But, you know, whatever it is, I think it's an important summer for the Hawks, and we all got to make sure we get better and look to the future.
Well, I'm already jacked up for next year. That's good. Patrick Sharp, of course, the famed Chicago Blackhawk, joining us for Breakfast with the Blackhawks. Thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
There you go. All right. Well, and congratulations to Andrew. You win an autographed Chicago Blackhawks hockey puck courtesy of MB Financial Bank. MB means business. Go to WGNradio.com/contest to submit your question for a chance to win. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get the news. And then Walter Jacobson joins us here on 720 WGN. Stay with us.
And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Steve Cochran Show, Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran. Today, of course, the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in Memphis, the Lorraine Hotel. You hear a lot about that today, and of course, we've been covering it all morning here on the Steve Cochran Show. Joining me now in studio, Walter Jacobson, to talk about the second part of this story, which really is about Chicago. It's a lot of cities have their own stories, but the story here in Chicago was after the assassination, what happened on the west side of Chicago, south side of Chicago, as riots ensued, and it really is an ugly mark on the history of Chicago, what we saw. Walter Jacobson was a young reporter at Channel 2 covering the not just the riots in Chicago, but also the time in 68, the Democratic Convention, which came up which would be 50 years this summer. Walter, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me here, Justin. Nice to be here. It's nice, although sad, to have some of those memories. But we kind of knew something was going to happen because the civil rights movement was getting very tough in the mid-60s, before 68. Martin Luther King was here in 66, I think it was, to start the Chicago movement, the first movement in the North for equal rights and housing and getting rid of segregation. So we were all kind of tense and aware even before he went to Memphis and got shot.
When that happened this day 50 years ago, and you being a news reporter here in Chicago, was the thought that the city would react in the way it did? I mean, it'd react with riots and that there would be unrest throughout the streets?
Well, only because there were a lot of riots. 68 was a very bad year. There were all kinds of riots, 500 riots or so all around the country. And we were used to Mayor Daley, the first, being in such control of everything that we didn't think it was going to be bad, but we knew something would happen if something happened to King. He had been here in 66 and he was stoned, so we knew that there was going to be some kind of trouble. Mm-hmm. Of course, nobody had any idea that he was going to be shot at that point. Wasn't even sure that the convention was going to be here, but when things broke out on Madison Avenue and 63rd Street and in Woodlawn and Lawndale, it really went fast. And we were, of course, out with cameras all day, all night for 2 days.
And you're seeing such that footage, you can find it on YouTube, but a lot of the Tribune, other places as well, have put together archival footage of what happened. And the story today, of course, will be about the reflection of King's legacy and, of course, the assassination. But the story continues because this riot wasn't a one-day thing. It didn't happen right away. It actually happened the next night and the weeks that subsequently after that. So it's a story that will have a 50th anniversary for the next couple weeks.
Well, I'm sure, and it's very appropriate that a lot of attention is paid to the legacy. But it would be a shame to not talk a little bit about what happened on the streets and what that meant for Chicago. People were afraid. People were afraid even before Martin Luther King was killed because there was so much tension in that year. And when he came here and was stoned in Marquette Park, mm-hmm. we knew that something bad was going to happen at some point.
A lot of the history, and I wasn't alive at that time, but a lot of the history points to the way, as you mentioned, the old man, Mayor Daley, who the way that he ruled with an iron fist here in this town, and a lot of memorable, amazing quotes that came out from that time, the idea of, you know, shoot to kill, and where that and essentially the misinformation that came out about whether or not that was actually what he said or
how he did
said
say it.
Yeah.
Oh.
But this concept of what it meant when it came to what a riot was in Chicago, did the way that this city was ruled by Mayor Daley at the time, did that exacerbate the situation? Did it actually add fuel to the fire when it came to rioting in the streets of Chicago?
Well, the decisions that he made prior to the Democratic Convention, which was, what, 3-4 months after King was shot, he made some bad mistakes then, and he knew it, and we knew it, and we kind of pressed him on it. Why would you, for example, insist? I'm talking about the convention time,
the 68
riot before the convention and during the convention. When he deprived those people who wanted to demonstrate because he was so nervous and didn't understand really what was going on in the minds of those kids. They were mostly kids who came here, SNCC and all the other civil rights movement activists, and he wouldn't give them permits to march. So they marched where they wanted to march, which was in Grant Park and on Michigan Avenue. And the shoot to kill order came prior to the convention because he knew from the last time when King was shot, he knew that there was going to be trouble. And when it really exploded, he was not going to allow Chicago to be portrayed as a city of a riot, which it was anyway.
Was it easy for you to cover the aftermath of the assassination of Martin Luther King and the riots on the West and South Side? Was as a news reporter, because it was a segregated city and it was difficult to get to certain neighborhoods, especially since I would assume at the time news reporters and newscasters, they weren't necessarily going to those places. Was it difficult to cover this because there was such a segregated city at the time?
I don't think it was difficult to get there. I mean, the city wasn't broken down into safe and unsafe areas, and the police were expecting and we were kept away. But it was such a horrible, horrible feeling. I mean, to watch all those fires take down those buildings and to watch them drive cars into storefronts and run out with not only clothes but television sets. And, you know, most of us understood what was behind that, why it happened, and we tried to be understanding rather than just take the position that they've got to be stopped no matter what, bring in the guard. He brought in 20,000 police and National Guard and other military people for 10,000 demonstrators. Tanks were on the streets with machine guns on the tanks, and there were bayonet. You know, they were fixed bayonets where the soldiers were marching. And, you know, you could get a look at the face on the soldiers. And they were on the other side of all this, mostly, and with some good reason. But you could just sense the bitterness on both sides.
Yeah, Walter Jacobson in studio. We're talking about, of course, the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King and the subsequent riots that happened here in the city of Chicago after that assassination. We'll continue that conversation.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
It's Steve Cochran Show. Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran. Bill and Wendy coming up here at 10 o'clock. In studio, Walter Jacobson, as we wrap up our conversation about the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., but also what happened here in Chicago. And that'll be the story. I know on the download tomorrow night, former Alderman Dorothy Tillman's going to join me at the big table. We'll talk about not only the legacy and, of course, the lasting impact of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., but what happened in Chicago after the fact. And the remnants today, you can still see, Hermine Hartman was talking about still the impact of on the west side of Chicago, never recovered. For you, Walter, to be a journalist who covered this event and covered the Democratic National Convention in 68, but then also everything else in between that has happened, where does a story like the Chicago riots after the death of King, where does it rank? I mean, is it at the top of your list of things that you covered in this in your time as a journalist in Chicago?
Well, Justin, there have been so many. And, of course, it was at the top. Not the very top, but the top of the first, say, four or five. I mean, the World Series was up there, too, and the Democratic Convention was up there, too. This was confined to feelings about seeing destruction. And since then, wondering about what has happened. And as you mentioned to me earlier, the desolation on the West Side remains. There hasn't been economic, and there hasn't been infrastructure built. There hasn't been enough money invested in the inner city. So, you know, 10% of the African Americans in this country now will say that things were not much better at this point than they are not much better than they were back then. Mm-hmm. Whereas 30-some percent of the whites say, yes, there has been great progress. That's very difficult, you know? So we all have to be on alert because something like that can happen again, although I have to say that the people who run the city have improved their knowledge and enhanced the decision-making processes.
We'll see. It's a municipal election year coming up here in 2019. All right, Walter Jacobson, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you soon. Good to see you, as always.
My pleasure.
And we'll continue here on 720 WGN with the coverage of the 50-year anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. Because there's a lot of other stories that go into this, including I got Sam is on the line, who we're not going to get to, but Sam, essentially a police officer. We haven't heard the stories, but you can see all of those great stories in the Tribune and other places of all the different people that were involved in a monumental moment in Chicago history, the aftermath of the death of Martin Luther King Jr. Okay, we'll take a break. Coming up, Bill and Wendy, stay with us.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Bill and Wendy in studio right now to take over. Their wonderful show is coming up next. Good to see you guys.
Wonderful. Now we have a wonderful show.
Now there's pressure.
There's always pressure.
It's going to be pretty great today.
Just know I'm always, always listening.
Well, thank you. That's very nice.
Just like mom and dad.
Yeah, right.
That's very spooky and very nice all at the same time. Scheduled to appear.
Yeah.
Eddie Money.
What?
Yeah, Eddie Money. Domiti Pongo. Dr. John Duffy, yeah. Tom Skill, and I say scheduled to appear because, you know, sometimes the guests listen to the first part of the show and they cancel.
So. Is that how it works?
Yeah.
They all sit there and they judge.
Yes.
This didn't stop. I'm out. I can't put my name associated to this show.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Fine,
we should call the show that. Here come the judge.
Yeah,
come
right. The judge. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah. Any money, really.
Yeah. Are you heading out with us tomorrow? Are you at White Sox Park tomorrow?
I'm not here. I'm at the opening day show. I'm here. I'm Cochran, Steve, Andrea, Dave. They're all out at the park.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm here sort of going, let's go out to the park.
Oh.
Like it's opening day celebration, but I'm
Why
sort
are
of,
you here? We're going to be at
I know.
Cork and Carrie.
Well, I'm going to, after the show, I'm going to try to meet you guys there.
Oh, all right.
I will be leaving. I am not meeting you.
I was going to say, scheduled to appear.
Good. I look forward to that. Thanks, Justin.